Mrs. McKinty trial sensation. Murderer to hang. Read all about it.
John Moffat as Hercule Poirot and George Baker as Superintendent Spence in Agatha Christie's Mrs. McGinty's Dead.
It is one of the great sadnesses of life that one can eat only 3 times a day. But one must never allow overindulgence in breakfast or lunch to detract from dinner. For dinner is the supreme meal of the day and its most sublime moment. I had dined well at the Vieille Grand-Mère, but the rest of the evening yawned emptily ahead of me.
McKinty trial! Verdict!
If only my good friend Hastings were here. He never fails to exasperate me, and yet I miss him. I miss his incredulous, wide-eyed wonder, his open-mouthed appreciation of my talents, his stupendous astonishment when he at last perceives the truth that has been clear to me all along.
McKinty trial! Verdict!
Mon cher, cher ami, you never seem to understand that it is my weakness to show off.
McKinty trial sensation! Read all about it!
But he is far away in South America, and there is no one to appreciate my talents. It was too late for the theatres, and there was nothing to tempt me into any of the cinemas. Reluctantly, I made my way home to Whitehaven Mansions.
Monsieur Poirot, I hope you still remember me after all this time.
And to my great joy, there was my old friend and colleague, Superintendent Spence, sitting in an armchair, drinking a foaming tankard of ale poured out for him by the admirable George. The evening was saved.
I'm taking an unpardonable liberty dropping in on you like this.
No, but it is so kind of you to call in on an old acquaintance. I appreciate it more than I can say.
There's rather more to it than that, I'm afraid. And if you send me away with a flea in my ear, I shan't be surprised.
No, there will be no flea. What is it you want to ask me?
It's about the McGinty case. You've read about it, perhaps.
Not with any attention. An old woman murdered for her savings. How did she die?
That takes me back. Funny, I never thought about it until this moment.
I do not follow you.
There was a game we used to play when we were kids. We stood in a row, and there were questions and answers down the line. Mrs. McGinty's dead. How did she die? Down on one knee, just like I. And we'd all go down on one knee. Next question. Mrs. McGinty's dead. How did she die? Holding her hand out, just like I. And we'd all be kneeling down with our right arms held out. Then, Mrs. McGinty's dead. How did she die? Like this. And the boy at the end of the row would deliver a hefty blow and we'd all go down like ninepins. That takes me back, that does.
Yes, but how did she die?
She was hit a savage blow on the back of the head with some sharp, heavy instrument. We never managed to find the actual weapon. Her room had been ransacked and about £30 in cash had been stolen.
She lived alone?
There was a lodger, James Bentley.
Ah, yes, I remember the name.
There were no signs the place had been broken into. Bentley was hard up. He'd lost his job and owed 2 months' rent. The money was found hidden under a pile of stones in the garden at the back of the cottage. His coat sleeve had blood on it, Mrs. McGinty's blood. According to his first statement, he was never near the body. So it couldn't have come there by accident.
And he was arrested and put on trial.
At Kilchester Assizes. The jury took only 20 minutes to reach a verdict of guilty, and he was sentenced to death.
And you immediately got on the train and came straight to see me. Why?
Because I don't think he did it.
And why do you think that?
I can't give you a reason. I dare say the jury thought he looked like a murderer. I didn't.
And you know a great deal about murderers.
He wasn't cocky. And in my experience, they usually are.
What is he like, this James Bentley?
Unprepossessing sort of chap. Can't look you straight in the face. Made a bad impression on the jury.
Did he have a good counsel?
The man he was allotted under the Poor Persons Defence Act put up the best show he could.
So, according to the law of the land, James Bentley has nothing to complain of.
If he's hanged for a murder he didn't commit, he'll have plenty to complain of.
Very just observation. So what do you suggest?
I suspect you've got a pretty good idea of what's coming. The Bentley case is closed, and I'm already investigating an embezzlement. I'm not a free man.
And I am.
You've got it. Awful cheek, I know. But I can't think of any other way.
Do not distress yourself. I have leisure. Too much leisure. And it will be a challenge to the little grey cells. If James Bentley is already condemned, there's no time to lose. When was the murder?
November the 22nd, last year.
So, if Bentley did not kill Mrs. McGinty, who did?
Well, that's the trouble. As far as I can see, there isn't anybody.
Another bottle of beer, perhaps?
I won't say no.
But for every murder, there must be a motive. Did anyone profit by Mrs. McGinty's death?
Well, she did have £200 in the savings bank. Her niece gets it.
Her niece?
A Mrs. Birch. Lives in the same village. Husband's employed in the building trade. She's a pleasant enough woman.
Oh, yes, we knew that Auntie had a little something put by and we'd get it when she died. Not that we needed it, of course. We got something put by ourselves, but that's not to say it won't come in handy.
Your beer, Superintendent.
Oh, thanks. Cheers.
Yeah. So, tell me about Mrs. McGinty herself.
She was 64, a widow. Husband died 7 years ago. Since then, she's been going out daily, doing cleaning and various domestic chores around the village.
How long had she had a lodger?
Only since her husband's death. Bentley used to live with his mother at Cullen Quay, about 12 miles down the road. When she died, he sold the house and got a job in Kilchester. Breather and Scuttle, rather a second-rate firm of estate agents. When they had to cut down their staff, he was the first to go. He couldn't get another job and his money ran out. He was 2 months behind with his rent, and Mrs. McGinty was beginning to get impatient.
And did he know she had £30 in the house?
Oh, yes. She liked to keep money where she could lay her hands on it at any moment. It was under a loose floorboard in her bedroom. Bentley admitted he knew it was there.
So, tell me about her death.
It was on the night of November the 22nd. The police surgeon put the time of her death between 7 and 10 p.m. Most likely about 8:30.
And where was James Bentley at the time?
He said he was out walking. He did that most evenings after dark.
I came back at about 9 o'clock. I had my own key. I went straight up to my bedroom, and I read for a bit, and went to sleep. I thought something must be wrong when I came down in the morning and found no breakfast ready.
All the windows were closed and shuttered on the inside. There were no signs of any break-in.
So, either Bentley must have killed her, or she admitted her murderer herself while Bentley was out.
Exactly. We've eliminated the neighbours. The niece and her husband were out at the pictures in Kilchester. Everything pointed to Bentley, and there was blood on his sleeve.
How did he account for that?
Said he remembered brushing up against a butcher's stall the previous day. But of course it wasn't animal blood.
So, did he continue with his story?
Oh, no. You see, there was hair on the cuff as well. Mrs. McGinty's hair. So, he changed his tale.
I went into the parlour when I came back from my walk. And she was lying there, on the floor. I knelt down to touch her, just to make sure. And there was blood on the back of her head. I never could bear the sight of blood. I ran back up to my room and thought I was going to faint. I just lay there on my bed all night long. And in the morning, I couldn't bring myself to admit I knew she had been killed, and I hadn't done anything about it.
Not a very convincing story.
And yet, you know, it might have been true. He was frightened that he might be suspected, and so the silly Juggins put himself into it, right up to his neck.
It is possible. So, where am I to stay in this place? What did you say the name was?
Broadhinny.
Is there an inn there of moderate comfort?
There's the Three Ducks, but it doesn't put people up. There's the Lamb at Culhaven, 3 miles away, and then there's a kind of guest house in Broadhinny itself, Long Meadows. It used to be the manor, been in the hands of the Summerhayes family for generations, but they're reduced to taking in paying guests. I don't imagine it's very comfortable.
If I suffer, I suffer.
So what kind of cover story are you going to prepare for yourself? Who are you going to be?
I shall go as myself.
But do you think that's wise?
It is essential. It is time that we are up against. And what do we know? Nothing. So, my best hope is to arrive at Broadhinny pretending that I know a great deal. I am the great, the unique Hercule Poirot, and I am not satisfied with the verdict in the McGinty case, and I have a very shrewd suspicion of what actually happened.
And then?
Then I observe the reactions. And most definitely there will be reactions.
Don't go sticking your neck out. I don't want anything to happen to you.
But if it does, you would be proved right beyond the shadow of a doubt.
Well, that may be. But I don't want your death on my hands. Just watch your step.
Long Meadows was the closest I hope I will ever come to hell. The carpets were full of holes. There was thick dust on all the shelves. The springs protruded through the sofa. The dog had the mange. And the doors burst open with every gust of cold wind.
Maury! The cat's been sick again! What the devil should I do?
I'm coming, darling! Hold everything!
Maureen Summerhayes had red hair and an attractive freckled face. But it was clear that nature had not intended her to run a guest house.
Johnny, why the hell did you leave the back door open? The hens have got into the larder and they've woken up the baby.
Oh, sorry, Maureen. The latch is broken. It's time he woke up anyway.
And for this I was paying 7 guineas a week.
That's why I left the beans. I'd no idea where they got to. Would you mind frightfully, Mr. Would it bother you if I slice them in here? The smell in the kitchen's too frightful.
Oh, madame, I should be enchanted.
I do hope you're not too frightfully uncomfortable here. If there's anything you want altered, don't hesitate to say.
You are too kind, madame. I only wish it were within my powers to provide you with suitable domestics.
Domestics? What a hope! We can't even get hold of a daily. Our only really good one was murdered, would you believe?
Ah, that would be Mrs. McGinty.
Yes, Mrs. McGinty. And I can't tell you how much I miss her. Of course, it was all quite a thrill at the time, first murder we've ever had in Broadhinny. But as I told Johnny, it was a downright bit of bad luck for us. Without Mrs. McGinty, I just can't cope.
She was reliable and honest. You could trust her?
Oh, she'd never pinch anything, if that's what you mean. Of course, she snooped a bit, had a look at one's letters and all that. But one expects that sort of thing.
Maureen, that wretched dog's been at the hen's feed again.
Oh, damn, now he'll be sick as well.
Is this enough spinach, do you think?
Of course not.
Well, it seems a colossal amount to me.
Could be about a teaspoonful when it's cooked. Has the fish come?
No sign of it.
Hell! We'll have to open a tin of something. Could you do that, Johnny? One of the ones in the corner cupboard. That one we thought was a bit bulged. I expect it's all right, really.
What the devil's got into the mask?
Oh, blast! The beans have gone all over the floor. It's not my day.
Let me help you, madame.
Oh, thanks awfully. They do look a bit black, don't they? I'm afraid they won't be very nice.
You permit that I shut the door. There is a decided draught.
That door never stays shut. The house has been falling to pieces for centuries. Johnny's parents could never afford to do anything about it. And when we came back from India to live here, we couldn't do anything about it either. I say, the fish will probably be here in a minute. I wonder if you'd mind forking out for the first week's rent. You are staying a week, aren't you?
Perhaps longer.
sorry to bother you, but I haven't got any cash in the house.
Oh, pray not. Do not apologize, madame. Here you are.
Thanks a lot, Mr...
My name is Poirot, madame. Hercule Poirot.
What an unusual name.
I am, as you may know, a detective. Perhaps the most famous detective in the world.
Oh, I see you're quite a joker, Mr. Poirot. What are you detecting?
I am investigating the murder of Mrs. McGinty.
But that's all over, surely. They arrested the lodger. I expect he's been hanged by now.
He has not been hanged, and the case is far from over.
I must have cut my hand somehow. I'm bleeding all over the beans. Still, it won't matter. They're going into boiling water. Things are always all right when you boil them, aren't they? Even tins.
I think, madame, I shall not be in for lunch.
Oh, really? Nothing seems to be going right today. But you'll be in tonight, won't you? I'm thinking of having a go at rabbit stew.
It was time to set about my investigation. Mrs. Birch, Mrs. McGinty's niece, lived in a council house outside the village. It was neat and clean and smelt refreshingly of furniture polish and brasso.
Very unpleasant it's been having poor auntie murdered and the police tramping round all over the place, ferreting about and asking nasty questions with the neighbours all agog. I didn't think we'd ever live it down. I really did hope it was all over.
And suppose James Bentley is innocent after all?
Of course he's not innocent. He did it all right. I never liked the look of him. He's wandering about and talking to himself. Yeah, but Auntie always insisted he was harmless and obliging and didn't give trouble. She knows better now. Poor soul.
Can you tell me a little about your aunt? What kind of person was she?
We didn't see much of her, really. We used to go over for Sunday dinner once a month, or she'd come here. She always kept her house neat and tidy. And she went out cleaning, of course, round the village. 1 and 10 pence an hour was what she charged, though some of the people round here can afford 10 times that amount.
And did she go out very much? Did she have many friends?
She kept herself to herself. She went to church, but she didn't hold with any of the church activities. She used to go up to the pictures sometimes, but what she really enjoyed was her Sunday paper.
After about an hour, I took my leave. It seemed most unlikely that Mrs. Birch would have struck her aunt down with a meat chopper, or whatever the weapon was. And so I caught the train into Kilchester to call at the offices of Breather and Scuttle, the estate agents where James Bentley had once worked.
Precious little I can tell you about him. Well, nothing against the chap, but he had no idea of salesmanship and therefore perfectly useless in this job. If a client comes to us with a house to sell, we're there to sell it for him. If a property is miles off the beaten track, we stress its charm and antiquity and don't mention the plumbing. And if the house looks straight out at the gasworks, we talk about the amenities and the facilities.
I see that you are a judge of men, Mr. Scuttle.
Not too bad, not too bad.
So tell me, strictly between ourselves, do you think that James Bentley killed the old woman?
Of course he did.
And you think it was a likely thing for him to do, psychologically speaking?
Well, if you put it like that, no, not really. I shouldn't have thought he'd have had the guts. Mind you, he was a bit balmy, always a bit soft in the head, and what with being out of a job and all that, he might just have gone over the edge.
You had no special reason for discharging him?
Bad time of year. We sacked the one who was the least competent. Gave him a good reference and all that. He didn't get another job, though. No pep. Made a bad impression on people.
Excuse me. Do you mind if I sit down and talk to you for a moment?
I would be delighted, mademoiselle.
You see, I couldn't help hearing what you were saying to Mr. Scuttle.
Ah, now, you were sitting at the typewriter to the right of the back window.
Is Mr. Bentley going to appeal? You see, I really couldn't believe he did it. I thought it must be a mistake, but then the evidence...
Yes, mademoiselle?
There simply didn't seem to be anyone else who could have done it. I thought perhaps he might have gone off his head.
Did he ever show signs of being...
No. He was just rather shy and a bit awkward. He didn't make the best of himself.
You liked him?
Yes, I did. He was gentle and polite.
And he knew a lot, really. Things out of books, I mean.
Ah, yes. Things out of books.
And he missed his mother terribly. She'd been ill for years, apparently, and he'd done everything for her.
You and he were friends?
I wouldn't say that. We used to talk sometimes, but after he left, I didn't see much of him. I wrote to him once, but I didn't get an answer.
But you liked him?
Yes, I did.
What is your name, mademoiselle?
Maud Williams. Is there anything I can do to help?
Yes, I think there is. There are those who believe, Miss Williams, that James Bentley is innocent. I am the person charged with the investigation, and I may tell you that I have already made considerable progress. Now tell me, did he ever mention anyone with whom he, or perhaps his mother, were on bad terms?
No, never. His mother didn't like young women much, I gather.
Mothers of devoted sons rarely do. No, I mean more than that. Some family feud, some enmity, someone with a grudge.
No, he never mentioned anything of that kind.
Did he ever speak of Mrs. McGinty?
He used to complain she gave him kippers much too often. And once he said she was upset because her cat had died.
Did he ever... And you must be honest with me, please.
Mm-hmm.
Did he ever mention that he knew where she kept her money?
Actually, he did. We were talking about people being distrustful of banks, and he told me she used to keep her spare money under a floorboard. He said, I could help myself any day when she's out. Not quite as a joke. He didn't joke much.
Ah, that is good. When James Bentley speaks of stealing, he thinks of it as something that is done behind someone's back. He might have said, someday someone will hit her over the head for it.
I... Better be getting back. We're only supposed to take half an hour. It's a one-horse place, Kilchester. Mm-hmm. I've always had jobs in London before. Oh, you'll let me know if there's anything I can do, won't you?
Yes.
Oh, and could you possibly let me have your phone number?
So, at least there was one person who believed that James Bentley was innocent. I caught the train back to Broadhinney and went to inspect the scene of the crime. But the house Mrs. McGinty had kept so spotlessly clean was now dirty and uncared for. I called in at the house next door and at the other old cottages, but I could discover nothing that Superintendent Spence had not found. By then, my shoes were becoming uncomfortably tight, but I thought I should at least call in at the post office.
That'll be 4 and 10 pence altogether. Mm-hmm. Will there be anything more, sir?
No, thank you. Now, I am by way of being a stranger in these parts.
So I believe, sir. Come down from London, haven't you?
I expect you know my business here as well as I do, madame.
Oh, no, sir. I've really no idea.
Mrs. McGinty.
Ah, that was a sad business. Shocking business.
I expect you knew her well.
I certainly did. She'd always pass the time of day when she came in here for any little thing. Oh, yes. Terrible tragedy. And not settled yet, or so I've heard people say.
There is a doubt in some quarters as to James Bentley's guilt.
Well, wouldn't be the first time the police got hold of the wrong man. Oh, I wouldn't have thought they had in this case. Even so... Did come as a bit of a surprise. A shy, awkward sort of fella, but you wouldn't think of him as dangerous. Mind you never know, do you?
You think he was the only person who could have done it?
We do get some nasty tramps round here sometimes, and I suppose one of them might have found a window unfastened. But he wouldn't go leaving the money behind him, would he?
Mrs. McGinty never spoke of being nervous or afraid of anyone.
Not to me, she didn't. And she wasn't the nervous type. She'd stay late sometimes at Mrs. Carpenter's. That's Homely, on top of the L.
Mm-hmm.
They often have people to dinner, and Mrs. McGinty would go there to do the washing up, and then she'd come back in the dark. That's more than I care to do. Very dark it is coming down that L.
When did you see Mrs. McGinty last?
Must have been on the Monday. She came in to buy a bottle of ink.
She wanted a bottle of ink?
I expect she wanted to write a letter.
That seems indicated. And she was quite her normal self. She did not seem different in any way.
It's funny you should say that. She looked as if she was pleased about something, almost excited. There was quite a sparkle in her eye.
3 days before her death, Mrs. McGinty had bought a bottle of ink. Writing a letter was such an uncommon experience to her that she had to go out to buy a bottle of ink. But to whom had she written?
I can't think of anybody. And she wasn't much of a one for writing letters. There were cards at Christmas, of course, and I suppose she might have written to her sister-in-law once upon a time, but she died 2 years ago.
Can you remember whether there were any letters among her personal possessions?
I don't remember any. But I packed up all her things in a suitcase. I didn't know what to do with them.
I wonder if I might take a look at the contents of that suitcase.
It's upstairs. I'll get it down for you if you like, but I don't think you'll find anything. And the police went through it all.
A brush and comb. A dented silver-backed mirror. A china dog. A Bible. And a pair of shoes wrapped in newspaper. The Sunday Comet for the 19th of November. And on the following day, Mrs. McGinty went out to buy herself a bottle of ink. Women victims of bygone tragedies. And some very blurred reproductions of old photographs. Eva Kane, the other woman in the Craig murder case. Janice Courtland, whose sadistic husband met a violent end. Lily Gambol, tragic child killer. Vera Blake, unsuspecting wife of a murderer. Where are these women now?
And you think this may have had something to do with Mrs. McGinty's murder?
It is possible, is it not? She reads the paper, she buys the bottle of ink, and 3 days later she is brutally murdered.
So what are you suggesting? That she recognized one of these women's photographs and that woman killed her?
That is exactly what I am suggesting.
But if that's the case, that woman is probably still living in Broadhinny and would do anything to prevent anyone else recognizing her. I'll come down straight away.
In part one of Agatha Christie's Mrs. McGinty's Dead, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat, Superintendent Spence, George Baker. Maureen Summerhayes, Molly Gaisford. Major Summerhayes, Ian Masters. Maud Williams, Beth Chalmers. Mrs. Birch, Connie Walker. Mrs. Sweetman, Jilly Mears. Mr. Scuttle, Jeffrey Beavers. James Bentley, Tom George. Mrs. McGinty's Dead is dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.
And Mrs. McGinty's Dead continues at the same time next week.